This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Renegade Report. I'm Jonathan.
And Ramon is present. Jonathan, so you'll be hearing this tomorrow. We're actually recording at almost like 6:30 on a Monday evening.
Yes.
Because, well, who knows why. But anyway, this expropriation, like compensation thing, just won't go away.
Well, no, it's not going to go away. Kind of like we said it wouldn't.
No, but I see there's a hell of a lot of useful idiots who think that somehow this will all work out.
Well, it's not going to affect them, you see.
They're
excluded from the economy.
They're too stupid to. I'm not talking about poor people. I'm talking about.
No, we're talking about well-off people, actually.
Journalists and intellectuals. Because apparently when it's their time to be guillotined, I suspect they think the blade will be very blunt. So they'll just leave them with a bruise, you know, in the name of transformation, as opposed to decapitation. specifically, the useful idiot called Adrian Basson. Because over the weekend, AfriForum got this list, purportedly from the Department of Land Reform, and this is a list that these are the so-called test cases for expropriation without compensation. So AfriForum released this list, and they said, well, if you're on this list, tell us, let's set up a legal challenge. We can't verify the contents, but if it's not a list, Department of Land Reform would just say, this is not a list from us at all. And they haven't said that.
And there's a fair amount of information on the list. It's not it's not completely bogus. Someone had to go to quite a fair amount of effort to put all those farms on the list. The farm names are on the list. Plot numbers are on the list.
I mean, 190 farms.
The locations.
Yeah. Yeah. A government official says, no, this has nothing to do with us. And so Adrian Basson, the editor of News 24, the biggest news site in the country, says, how disgusting that AfriForum is, dabbling in outrage culture.
And spreading fake news.
And spreading fake news. Yes. And I was trying to say, there's no downside to overemphasizing the point that EWC is a fuck up.
No,
before it even starts, there's no downside from giving the worst scenario possible. There's none whatsoever, because the possibility is very high that it will be the worst possible scenario.
Well, he said we should have cool heads about this, and my response is absolutely not. We should not have cool heads about something completely irrational as removing private property rights from individuals. There's nothing cool-headed about that as an idea in itself, and the whole concept should actually fill you with rage and anger and just complete disgust.
Yeah, because I mean, you must look at it in terms of risk. So I'm reading Taleb, and Nicholas Taleb only speaks about risk. So what is the risk of such a thing? What are the goals, and what are the risks associated with it? The goals are, well, no one really knows what the goals are. It's land reform to advance that at a more, at a faster pace than before, to give back land that was stolen, but that wasn't really stolen because there's no proof. But okay, so it's like a lovey-dovey, happy thing. We're just going to take land away and give it to those people who deserve it. Okay, what are the risks? Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Complete
collapse. That's the highest form of risk possible. And the possibility of that is much higher than any so-called benefit that one gets on the other side of that equation. So, as I keep saying to people, there's no harm in overemphasizing the risk.
A reminder, I'm sure most of our listeners are well aware, but if you aren't, or if you're new to the show, there is nowhere that something like this has been tried where it has ever succeeded. It does not work. It's not going to work this time. This isn't a real Scotsman situation. It doesn't work. You cannot take away private property rights and hope to have a functioning economy following that. It's as simple as that. And it's very interesting because I don't know if you've noticed the people framing expropriation without compensation saying things like, South Africa is very good at this whole yes, but it's not as bad as this. So it's yeah. the, I was hijacked, but at least I wasn't hurt, you know?
Yeah.
So we do that with everything. And with the land stuff now, what was first, it was, that's an EFF policy. The ANC will never do that. Then it became an ANC policy and it was like, yes, but they'll never change the constitution. Then they say, well, they're going to change. Yes, but it will only apply to farmland, not to your residential property. Guess what, guys?
Yeah.
It won't matter. It won't matter, because if you remove private property rights, and I see you've been banging the drum on trying to get people to understand what that actually means, because if you remove private property rights from one thing, it's just a matter of time before you remove them from other things. And the lack of confidence that you get in the economy and the market as a result of doing that causes a collapse of everything. But you've been talking about everything from medical savings to unit trusts.
It's all property. So, I mean, when people say, oh, they only take unused land, unused property.
Yeah.
That definition applies to a wide variety of things.
What is that definition even?
Oh, no one knows.
I mean, if I keep a wheelbarrow and a piece of land, but nothing else, I'm using it to keep my wheelbarrow on.
So if you buy land for speculative purposes, which is what you do with investments. Anyway, so they'll take that away. Okay, what about, you know, your speculative pensions? What about your unused medical savings?
Yeah, I mean, you're not using them.
There's 60 billion rand that whatever Discovery has in savings for their customers. That's unused.
Yeah, which ironically the government forces them to have. Otherwise, they actually wouldn't have them.
Indeed. I mean, but anything from your car collection, you collect cars, that's unused stuff. That's unused property. Would the people need it? We will take it from you.
Look, if you're living in a 3-bedroom home and you're only using 2 bedrooms.
Disgraceful.
You are not using one of those bedrooms.
The third unused bedroom will be expropriated. No, it won't. Sorry. The garden and the pool and the paving will be expropriated outside.
The bricks of the house will leave, according to Julius Malema. Yeah. If you believe that, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. Just quite astounding.
Well, to be honest, the Eiffel Tower has been sold 3 times.
I know, it has been.
And it has been. And people fall for it every single time. But people, you must really understand the National Democratic Revolution. For some reason, the ANC supported the SACP for the past 60 years. Mm-hmm. They give the SACP 40 seats every single election. They agree with the communists on the National Democratic Revolution.
Yep.
They agree with the communists that China, Russia, and Cuba are like, you know.
Yeah. Well, what do you call it? Our best allies.
Some of our best allies.
Sure.
They agree with the communists about so many things, but somehow the ANC is not a communist organization. They are.
Yeah,
and absolutely. They say so in the policy documents since 1962. Read them. It says the revolution, the National Democratic Revolution, this is how it will happen. It's like a masterclass in strategy.
Yeah.
And then people get surprised.
They're willing to play the long game.
And people get surprised when they do communistic shit.
Yeah. Not surprising at all. And as I say, willing to play the long game, because I think, I've heard a lot of things like, you know, don't worry, Cyril's a capitalist. At the end of the day, Cyril will stop all of this from happening.
Well, Cyril's a fucking rent seeker.
Well, exactly. What makes you think Cyril's a capitalist? Cyril's the kind of guy who was sitting around and people were like, want some shares, Cyril? Want to be on the board, Cyril? And he was like, yeah, cool. I'll take that. Thanks very much. That's not capitalism, folks.
No, the bigger socialists have been, Muammar Gaddafi died with reportedly about $200 billion stashed away somewhere. He was the richest man in the world. Mm. Now it's Vladimir Putin, apparently. Jeff Bezos, Amazon.
Yeah.
Chicken feed, man, chicken feed. Hugo Chavez died with $6 billion. These are all communists. These are all,
for the people, of course.
For the people.
Yeah, they're keeping for the people.
And to think that's because someone is rich, that they're not communist is like just so anti-evidence. It boggles my mind that you would make that argument. Now, you could say, Cyril's solidifying his position and he's playing the long game and he doesn't have a full control over the leadership. Listen. If you're leader, you take control. If you can't take control, you're a shit leader. If it takes you 5 years to take control, you're a shit leader. And we know very well, because he keeps saying it, his goal is to do what, Jonathan? What is his goal? Unite the ANC. He said that 3 or 4 times in public. He doesn't give a fuck about you. He cares about uniting the ANC. Whatever second or third is well, irrelevant.
Exactly, to get where he needs to be, because as far as I'm concerned, this is the long game they've been playing. If you listen to some of those podcasts we did with Russ Lamberti, specifically the last one we did with him, he's spoken about this. He's spoken about the game they're playing. And if you want to talk about the 1%, there's no greater example of where the 1% truly exists than in a socialist or communist country. The 1% are the government, the 1% are the ruling elite, and the 99% are everyone else who's starving to death. Go back and listen to the podcast we did with Caleb from Venezuela. That's the reality of how it all functions. And to the people who believe that Cyril is trying to solidify some sort of power in the ANC, even if that were true, and even if he supposedly gets that done and then he's going to turn the ship around, he's going to face it away from the iceberg, which in my opinion is too late. Even if he does that, you're assuming that all the other people jockeying for position in the organization are just going to drop their plans. They're all going to be thwarted by Cyril. Well, you know, Didi Mabuza, who has allegedly literally killed people, need to be careful with my words there, allegedly literally killed people to get where he wants to be in his life and politics, etc., is the deputy president. If you think that guy's going to sit back and go, oh, you know, I see it now, we were wrong, I think I should follow Cyril's lead. And he's not the only one. He's not the only one. We've got Jacob Zuma leaves the party. A couple of ministers, a handful of ministers get fired. A whole bunch of others are still there. Most of the MPs are still there. The people who saw through the rot are still there. The people who aren't MPs anymore but saw through the rot, the Derek Hunnicombs, who suddenly pretend like they're such angels, who sat in Parliament and when there was votes of no confidence against Jacob Zuma, voted for Jacob Zuma. All those people are still around. So the idea that Cyril's going to wrestle some sort of power and he's then going to right the ship, get off it.
But that's assuming Cyril actually is a capitalist in this in a
and he's not
in a political sense, because let's look at Zimbabwe. So there was a minor coup. It was just ZANU-PF trying to get power for longer because Mugabe was tired and sick and kept sleeping in.
Yeah, it's going to go away. So how do you give people confidence in the new government? You make as if the new government are new guys, but they're right. Not new guys. They're the same old.
They're the same old guys. But here's the thing: Zimbabwe has had the same revolutionary political party for 37 years. They fucked everything to bits. Fucked it up completely. You know, you have friends, family there,
100%.
Right. I haven't been in a number of years. And they still won 2/3 in the elections. Not free, not fair, don't get me wrong. It wasn't a fair election because the state controls the media and all that. They still get 2/3. The ANC is not looking at that and saying, oh, that's a terrible thing they're doing. They think, oh, look, after doing everything possible, after looting, after destroying the economy, after impoverishing the entire population, they're still in power. Why isn't that a precedent for the ANC? It's not a failure. It's like the ANC is looking.
Complete
like,
success.
Look how far we can go and still remain in power.
Yeah.
It's aspirational.
If you're in their position, absolutely. And once again, the idea, you see, you might be shaking your head and going, no, they'll never do that. They care about me. They do not give less than 2 shits about you. And this applies to most governments. In fact, all governments. Governments don't care for you. They don't care for you. They may care for specific issues and they may have pet projects and those types of things. But at the end of the day, they're not in it for you. And this government, I don't know what more they have to prove for someone like Adrian Bason. You know, you talk about him as a useful idiot. It's just beyond frustrating to me. He was the one who wrote this Laptop Boys or Laptop Club column about Gwen and Gwenya. The minute a black person thinks a different thought to what you're meant to think in South Africa as a black person, you can guarantee Adrian Bason, Max Dupree, and Peter Du Toit. And
he still has a job after Half Post died.
Yeah, there's a few others. It's amazing. Virashni doesn't have a job there anymore. Ferial doesn't have a job there. But Peter Du Toit, don't worry, he's still got his job. All of these people will come out of the woodwork to tell the black person exactly what they should think.
Yeah. So Adrian wrote a piece about the so-called split in the DA, about this BE bullshit. Like, no one cares. And he says, Gwen and Gwenya's head of policy, and now there are worries that the Institute of Race Relations, her previous employer, has undue influence in the DA. I'm like, listen, fucker, I've known Gwen for 7 years, 8 years, before she even started. Our first interview with her, she wasn't even in the IRR.
Yep.
And she said exactly the same things then as she says now. B's bullshit, liberal values, property rights, freedom of speech. She's the most hardcore liberal in the classic sense that I know and has been for the past 7, 8 years. And now that she's in a position of power, now you worry that the IRR is influencing her. How fucking dare you?
Yeah, you know nothing of the woman.
I spoke to people in the IRR, and someone said to me on the side, I said, listen, we've been fighting this slashing of BEE for like 7 years. Gwen does it in 3 months, and now they want to give us credit. Well, we don't deserve the credit. We've been failing. And now she went in 3 months, boom, done it.
Yeah,
and it was her idea in the first place.
Yeah, it's this whole thing. We must malign people. And I suppose one of the most frustrating things, obviously people disagree with her. But instead of putting forward your argument, she's turning around. She's saying BEE has not worked. It is a failure as a program, and we need to find another way to uplift Black people in this country. And without
using race as a proxy.
Sure, and so we've got to do that another way. She's got evidence for why BEE has failed. For God's sake, anyone with half a brain has got evidence, can see the evidence for why BEE has failed, how it has benefited a minority of individuals. And instead of going, look, I disagree with you, and this is why I disagree with you, this is why I believe it can be implemented correctly. No, you're part of a club, or you don't think for yourself. White people think for you, or you're a racist, as we know that comment comes.
Or as Ferrell Haffergy said, right wing ideologue.
Yep. You're right wing. And let me just say something about being right wing. Being right wing is no longer and should never have really been an insult, okay? Frankly, as far as I'm concerned, you can go back to the Marius Roots interview that we did. The right wing has never been bigger in the entire world than it is right now, because the left wing is freaking insane. And most people don't identify with this kind of nonsense. They can see it, they can detect it, and they can see through the bullshit. So frankly, take your right-wing ideologue. If John Stuart Mill is right-wing, I'm right-wing. If
John Stuart Mill's a Nazi, don't you know?
If Thomas Sowell is right-wing, I am bloody well right-wing.
Klansman.
Yeah. So you can take the right-wing as an insult and you can shove it.
Yeah, and my favorite thing is when journalists quote Thomas Sowell. Non-ironically.
That was hilarious.
Non-ironically.
Really clubby, actually, retweeted Thomas Sowell.
One of the greatest living economists of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And these people have no idea who he is. They have no idea what his ideas are. They have no idea what the quote is about. They have no context for the quote. But they retweet it and say, oh, white people. If being privileged felt, I can't remember what the quote is. Equality means a loss because you were used to being privileged in the past. He's talking about the fucking welfare state. He's talking about poor people.
Yeah.
Not about rich, white, privileged people. So, yeah. So, no, fuck you. If property rights, owning a gun, wanting to make money, and fighting for property rights make me right wing, then fuck you, I'm right wing. And I'm going to fight you on the streets. Not to die for saying I'm right wing, but it's not an insult because I know that we are right. We are the ones that ended slavery.
Yeah,
we're the ones that ended segregation. Mm-hmm. Well, in the US at least, the right wing defeated the Nazis, defeated the Soviet
instituted
Union,
instituted feminism,
gave the pull, gave the vote to women and other also that woman stuff. Right, like women only got the vote like 60 years ago. Yeah, men got the vote like 120 years ago. Like there wasn't like 5,000 years of men voting and then we gave the woman the vote. No, fucking no one voted for like
a very
centuries.
Long time, yeah.
But anyway, the right wing the right wing has given you everything you need in your life right now.
Well, how you define the right wing now? I mean, this never used to be the right wing. I mean, you could have used that as an insult potentially 50 years ago, 60 years ago, maybe. But the reality is that these things that are being called and labeled right-wing now are liberal ideas They are the way the world got to be as successful as it is right now.
And many of them are lefty ideas, huh?
Yeah.
The speech association freedom stuff was very left-wing.
Yep.
For a long time.
They are ideas that brought the world to where it is now. They are the reason we have a civilization we hopefully most of us like and respect and would like to maintain. I suppose that's the conservatism part, is the maintenance of that. And if that's liberal ideas have become right wing, then cool.
Yeah. But I wish these people actually had an argument. I wish there was something, but it's just apparitions. The Adrian Bassons.
We know this.
The Adrian Bassons of the world. I mean, I saw him once at Virashni Pillai's ombudsman hearing when she called me alt right, and you were standing next to me, but it wasn't you.
Yes.
All Jews look the same, according to her. And the guy just refused to speak. And he was horrified about the arguments Mark Oppenheimer was making. He's like, oh, according to Mark Oppenheimer, there's a white genocide. It's like, no, he's just saying the whites are a useful scapegoat in society. Yeah. So the article was wrong.
They've always got to straw man the argument. Instead of just take on the argument, we're not always right.
But it's always white
people. And we're willing to admit that.
Yeah, but why are white people bashing white people all the time? If you're not happy about being white, then...
Well, you can't change it, you see.
You can't change it, but...
You can grovel at the altar of political correctness.
Yeah, but I mean, those are the people that get shot first, thank God. Collaborators always get shot first. The Knights of the Long Knives was about taking out the opponents in the Nazi Party, and they were communists in the Nazi Party. They were taken out. This always happens. So, yeah. Those who don't get taken out are the fierce opposition.
Yeah.
In most conflict. The opposition doesn't get taken out. It's the ones that are similar to you and stand in your way of homogenizing power. Those are the ones that get taken out.
So you said today, I think you said that you reckon the ANC is going to get 60% come next election.
Yeah, based on...
Close.
Based on the polling I see, yeah.
You think nothing's going to change? I mean, it's always hard. These are predictions, it's and you never know.
And Ipsos polls are notorious.
Well, the last Ipsos poll was ridiculous. I think they pegged the DA at less than 20%.
It was 13.
Yeah, I mean that's not going to happen, regardless.
I see a status quo. The ANC are very good at getting people out to vote. I don't see it changing. I see the DA also between 20% and 23%. EFF between 6 and 8. Maybe IFP gets, they had 2% last time. Maybe they get to 3 or 4, depending on KZN. KZN is the big ANC stronghold, so if they break through there, they could get some good votes. COPE, I don't know. There's no by-election results to show.
Although COPE might pick up a bit. COPE has been one of the loudest voices in response to the EWC rhetoric.
Yeah, but that's the only thing.
They claim to fame currently.
Yeah, people don't really know what they're on about. The DA is just pissing in the water. No one knows what's going on, let alone themselves.
Well, I think Gwen has given them some good direction recently. They had a lot of bad sort of press for a long time.
There's a moratorium. No fucking Twitter accounts of DA personnel. Because you question each other.
You're going to tell Helen that.
No, Helen's great. I don't give a fuck about Helen.
So no moratorium on Helen.
She has no institutional control of the DA, so I don't really care. But you got Pumzile Van Damme saying, we did not renege on BEE. And then someone else says, yes, we did. Says, no, we didn't. James Self said we didn't. Says, no, James Self said he did. You're doing this in public, you fucking morons.
Yeah, but
hello.
For a reason, though. So I think it was Ferrell who said there's division in the DA. And I think that's not completely untrue because Pumzile Van Damme, as we know previously, is she leads a almost neo Marxist faction within the DA, and she's one of the people. I mean, they got a few weeks back. They pounced on something. What was it? Musi and Pumzile. Oh, there was a
Ashwin.
The Ashwin saga, yeah. So the Ashwin saga happens and Musi tweets within 30 minutes, an hour, sort of saying, oh, this is terrible racism and it's unacceptable and Pumzile is backing it. And that is the identity politics wing of the party. So I think when they go into meetings, they lose arguments because you can't actually win arguments with those shitty ideas. But of course, they can't accept that they've lost the argument. So then in public, they try to sort of throw sort of shade at the side of the party that's actually won the policy decision, and yeah. and to create discord, and hopefully through creating discord, and it's you know it's what you keep sort of saying is this tyranny of the minority, which is that it doesn't take a lot of people to cause great strife, really,
yeah, or great change,
and or great change, or to get their way, even if that way is completely against what the majority want or need is,
yeah.
And so I do think that that does exist, and I don't think that that should be necessarily underestimated. I do think that's why the DA, as we've mentioned in previous shows, will probably lose some ground in this election, is because their messaging has been all over the show.
Yeah, it's just awful. It's just, I mean, I don't know what more to say about them. yeah, nothing much. I like Gwen.
You like Gwen, and that's
I mean, she's a friend, so I mean, I like her.
Yeah.
John Stenhouse is pretty cool. Yeah, that's it. Like, what more do you want to say?
Yeah, I suppose it's the same as people who sort of will say, well, they're good people in the ANC, and we will say, well, they're good people in the DA.
They were good people in the Nazi party. What the fuck does that mean? Is that the one that didn't want to burn the Jews? Like, define good. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. What irritates me is that the fucking ANC are on the huge back foot. The high petrol prices, increasing VATs, huge, you know, standards of living are rising. I don't know about you. My fucking bills have gone like way up.
Yeah, through the roof.
Yeah, through the roof. Policy uncertainty. And what do? They have a public fight about whether BEE is fucking legit or not. Like, for fuck's sakes. It's not difficult. Fight. I'm going to tell them again, because I know you listen. Fighting against the NHI, which is basically expropriation without compensation for medical care.
Mm-hmm.
Fighting against expropriation without compensation. And fucking fight for breaking down and privatizing
yeah.
the state-owned enterprises. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to fucking do for the next 9 months. For everything else, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, stop fighting with each other.
Or do it in your own time. Don't do it in public. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, it's not that difficult. Although it's happening everywhere in the world at the moment. You got, did you see this thing that happened in the UK over the past week? So
it wasn't Brexit, so no, I didn't.
Yeah, they got to not report on Brexit for a full week. Boris Johnson writes a column for the Daily Telegraph, and
you know how much he gets paid?
No, I don't.
£250,000 a year.
Good for him.
For the past like 20 years, he's had that column. Huh?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So. I actually can't access the column, and most of the people losing their minds can't access it either because it's behind a paywall. And in fact, when I went to do research on what had actually happened, I couldn't access the topic or the document that he had written, the column. And I also couldn't find what he had actually said in context within the sentence of what he had said in any of the reporting on it. They picked the words that were offensive. And they ran with it. And there's been nonstop media coverage for a week.
Well, what's the topic?
So bottom line is he writes a column on the fact that Denmark has banned the burqa and the niqab.
Right, in public, which,
I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly.
Who cares?
And he doesn't agree. He says openly, I do not agree with banning this item of clothing, which is the correct position to take. You don't ban people from their personal decisions. But then he does go on to say two things about people wearing these specific items. He says that so the way it was reported is that he said people who wear them are look like letterboxers and bank robbers, but that's not the context of it. So but you're allowed to laugh, Ron.
Even if that was, that's great.
Well, Rowan Atkinson thought it was fucking hilarious. But
oh yeah, Mr. Bean, the gateway to the alt-right.
Yes, the gateway to the alt-right. Sure. Yeah, the Mr. Free Speech is certainly. But that's what I mean. Everyone's on the right now. So what he had said, if I can just read this quickly so people have some context. I've only got the one paragraph where he had made the one comment, and that is, he says, if you tell me that the burqa is oppressive, then I am with you. If you say that it is weird and bullying to expect women to cover their faces, then I totally agree. And I would add that I can find no scriptural authority for the practice in the Quran. I would go further and say that it is absolutely ridiculous that people should choose to go around looking like letterboxes, and I thoroughly dislike any attempt by any invariably male government to encourage such demonstrations of modesty, notably the extraordinary exhortations of President Ramzan Kadyrov of Chechnya, who has told the men of his country to splat their women with paintballs if they fail to cover their heads. Now, that's the one paragraph that people, but they're not losing their minds about that paragraph, which in context of what he's saying sounds very reasonable to me. They're losing their minds over the fact that he referred to people who might wear these items as letter looking like letterboxes. Now, they've literally gone crazy in the UK. It's been nonstop coverage about how he's Islamophobic, how the conservatives in the UK, the Tories, have an Islamophobia problem, which is just beyond hilarious, because you have Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the frickin' Labour Party, again and again either saying anti-Semitic things, laying wreaths for the people who died, the terrorists in Munich who died after they massacred the Israeli
Olympic team.
This man is beyond the salvation. Okay, in this sort of sense, and no, the Tories have his Islamophobia problem, because basically what Boris Johnson is turning around and saying is, it's a bit weird that you force your woman to be oppressed, essentially, in this outfit. And the majority of the UK, by the way, based on polling, agrees with him.
Well, I think any normal
and some,
any reasonable person would agree with him.
Some people in the Muslim community have come out and agreed with him.
But it's like the Jordan Peterson thing with gender pronouns. It's not about using them. It's about being forced to use them.
Mm-hmm.
If you are willingly, you know, whatever, wearing your niqab or burqa, whatever the fuck it's called.
Well, it's different if it's depending on what it is.
Oh, I don't give a fuck. But if you're willingly, you know, dressing in it, great. Then you have, then you're willingly allowed to take it off in public areas.
Yeah.
If you walk into a bank,
and if you get married and decide you don't want to wear one, there'll be no persecution against you, and you won't suffer any harm.
But if women were willingly wearing it, fine. They have no problem willingly taking it off in a public area for
identification.
Exactly. When entering a bank or getting a speeding ticket, right? But they can't take it off then. So where's the willingness? What's to show that they are not being forced to wear it?
Yeah.
There's not much evidence to suggest that they're doing this willingly, especially in the UK this year, where global warming has hit like an all-time high of like 37 degrees, and you're walking around in a polyester sack.
Yeah,
because that's really empowering.
Yeah,
not like linen or silk or something that's breathable. No, fucking polyester. Flammable shit.
Are you sure it's always poly? I don't know. I don't know for a fact that it's always made out of that material. But still, I agree with you. The entire principle. This is the point. Once again, is that if you hold a view within liberalism, then you believe that individuals should be able to make their own choices about what they do in their daily lives.
Yeah, but it's the same about free speech, though. I mean, I'm not going to use my free speech to insult you because you're Jewish, because you have no like choice. Your religion is your choice. I don't give a fuck what you... I mean, okay, Jews... What Judaism is a religion of choice, right? But it's also... Yeah. Jews are also
it's
a cultural...
It's also an ethnicity.
An ethnicity.
Yeah.
But as a Muslim, you choose to be a Muslim. So I can take the piss out of you as much as I want to, because it's a choice. I'm not going to say you fucking half-dead beat Arab or something like that. But like, you choose to believe in stupid ideas, and I'm going to take the piss out of you. Like your people with fucking not putting on electricity on Saturdays. Like, it's remarkable to me. Like, I think I find it hilarious.
Sure.
Like, I'm not going to go there and say you're stupid.
Sure, and Christians putting ash on their forehead on and eating pancakes on a weekday. I mean, you know.
Pancakes are great, by the way.
Pancakes are awesome.
Exactly. So fuck you. Not that I'm Catholic.
You see, we can rip everyone off, right?
And it should be fine.
You should all be offended
but,
now.
But, I mean, the British have been emasculated so much by the busybodies. You can't express like a simple thing where you say, I approve of people choosing to wear this, but I understand if that they look a bit strange in public, because they are fucking strange.
Mm.
When I see someone with pink hair, like whatever, like tattoos and huge earrings in their nostrils and their toes, like it's weird, right? I'm allowed to look twice.
Sure.
Because it's weird.
And they've probably made that choice partially because it is weird. Yeah. They want to stand out for whatever reason.
But to assume that you must now control where my eyes go, or what I say about someone, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, this is very Orwellian.
Well, I mean, controlling what people say and the whole Orwellian concept, I got a bit of blowback because I did not defend Alex Jones. So let me just put that out there.
I defend Alex Jones.
I defend Alex Jones. I don't really have anything to defend Alex Jones on in terms of a position, because I think a lot of his positions are really silly. And I think he's admitted that he's playing a role. So Alex Jones views what he does as acting, essentially. But I'm not, he's a conspiracy theorist, and he said some really dodgy things.
No, but that has a lot of terrible world consequences.
What?
The Sandy Hook stuff, where he says they're all hoax people. Yeah. He actually released, he doxed the family that lost a child.
So I'm not defending any
And people went after them and looking for them, and they had to change houses. I mean, why are you burying your child? There's
kids, I'm not defending any of his positions.
No, of course not.
And as I made clear, I actually have never ever watched Alex Jones. I've seen like clips of him where people mock the guy. Because he rips off his shirt all the time, and he tells like this, and
does make Fogs gay.
Some bullshit like that. So I'm not defending any of his positions, but I defend his right to have those positions, to say what he wants to say.
So here's an interesting conversation now.
Yeah.
If you are banned from McDonald's, fuck, you can go to Burger King, right? You can go to Steers.
Yes.
If you're banned from dominant tech companies.
Yes.
And the alternatives are really, really awful. Should there be not different rules? They're private companies, they should be able to do what they want. But should they be treated in a way that's a little bit more?
Yeah.
How can I explain?
I don't think we've started to properly have this conversation yet, because previously and basically free speech as we understand it has pretty much come from the West and mostly from the United States. They're the closest to free speech absolutists that you'll get. There's not really hate speech. The only thing you can get in trouble for in terms of your speech in the United States is for inciting imminent violence or harm. So if you shout fire in a crowded or bomb in a crowded theater, that's the old trope. In theory, you could get in trouble. And if you defame someone, and it's obvious defamation.
Yeah.
But other than that, they pretty much free speech absolutists. Say whatever you like, do whatever you like. But that applies to the government. So the government may not limit your freedom of speech, but private companies may. In other words, McDonald's, if you're standing on a public street and you're shouting something bigoted, the government may not come and do anything about that. You're allowed to shout bigoted shit. If you walk into the McDonald's and you start shouting the bigoted stuff, then McDonald's may remove you.
Property rights.
Yeah. Now the problem we have here is that people go, all right, well, Alex Jones got removed from YouTube. So what he should just do is he should just start his own YouTube.
Yeah, or go to DTube or an alternative, which has 0.0001% of the users.
Also don't have the tech and don't have the base to host and all of this stuff. So, but the problem is this goes a step further, because people say that, and then, for example, Gab. I don't particularly use Gab, but I know some people do use it instead of Twitter. It's an open platform and you can say whatever you like. This is essentially their policy. And so what happened to Gab is Gab does open an alternative to Twitter. And then Microsoft, I think, cracks down on them and says, we're not going to even host you on Microsoft servers anymore. Now, there is no other way to host yourself, because you have to have – and then – you know what comes next? The telecoms companies that broadcast the internet itself, they actually pretty much make sure the internet gets to your house.
Well, ISPs, yeah.
If they turn around and go, well, so now you've gone and you open up your own Twitter, you create your own platform, because Microsoft says we won't host you on our platform. So you do that even. And then the companies who have all the network turn around and go, well, create your own telephone network or your own distribution network. Yeah. There has to be a line somewhere here where we go, hold on a second.
Because you're dealing with monopolies in this case.
Well, this is what...
Technical monopolies.
Doesn't China have exactly this? The Chinese government has a complete monopoly on all of their technology, on all of their technology companies, all of their technology distribution. And so what they do is they get to control exactly what is thought, what goes in and what comes out and what people can and can't do and say.
Yeah.
And I do think there's a very interesting conversation to be had here.
Yeah, because
about where the line is.
Because we used to say, oh, you know, if you kicked off Twitter, it's a private company that could do what they want.
Yeah.
We said that numerous times.
Yes.
And I still think.
I still feel that.
To a large degree, I think that is correct.
Mm-hmm.
But however, there's an interesting thing. So when you log on to Twitter, so I think of Twitter as perhaps like a huge exhibition hall. Just imagine, for the sake of it, a huge virtual exhibition
hall. And a number of people are running around naked on fire.
No. And your Twitter account is your little square in the exhibition hall.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend years growing it.
Yeah. Watching the plants.
Yeah. You spend years growing on your Twitter account. It's like becomes your property within this exhibition hall.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the exhibition hall just changes the rules arbitrarily and kick you off. But you've put in time, effort, years to get to whatever, 100,000 followers on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And that just cuts it off.
Yeah.
Isn't there an interesting dynamic there for property rights?
Yes.
Because they give you, how can I explain? Because your account, you build it yourself. You just use the platform.
Mm.
But if the platform is arbitrarily just taking people off, now they did it Alex Jones, then they did it Gavin McInnes.
Yeah.
And the Proud Boys, who are some, I don't know, some people say neo-Nazis. I don't even know who they are.
I don't actually, yeah.
I'm not very plugged into that. But ISIS still has like, you know,
ISIS has accounts,
videos.
Iran regularly posts propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
Erdogan, I think, has an account.
So
he's arresting and killing journalists.
So perhaps the big problem is the terms are not defined. Like, what gets you kicked off? Because it's quite arbitrary at the moment and it seems quite biased against so-called right-wing people.
Yeah, and look, even then, I mean, it's very clear that there's a business decision. I'm sure people are shouting Trump at their phones. And there's a very clear business decision made to not remove Donald Trump, because some of the tweets that he has posted would have gotten lesser individuals in terms of in their stature, would have gotten them removed from the platform. There's no doubt about it. And he stays on the platform. So it is arbitrary and clearly... You know, your exhibition hall, I would say it's almost like you lease the space from them. You rent or lease the space. But they say, look, you can stay in the space. These are the rules, terms of service.
Yeah.
And you can stay in the space as long as, and it's your space, as long as you don't violate the terms of service.
Sure.
I think the biggest problem is that the terms of service are just so fluid.
Alex Jones, they say Spotify, Apple, Facebook, and YouTube said, no, he's got hateful comments. Okay, which ones? They don't show. They don't say which comments got it kicked off.
Well, there's a whole other dynamic to this. You know how Alex Jones got removed. Is that
one person did it.
Oliver Darcy from CNN. He's a reporter who's... Let's just remember what journalists were meant to be, okay? In their professional lives, they were meant to be impartial observers. This guy has gone on a crusade, because it can only be described that way, against Alex Jones. So one media network, you know, Trump talks about people being fake news being the enemy of the people. Well, one media network has gone after a rival media network to remove them. So Oliver Darcy, together with support from CNN, from people like Brian Stelter and Jim Acosta, has gone after Alex Jones. And has got him removed from a lot of these platforms. And then, in fact, when he was removed, and they all said it was for comments that he had made over time, and it was just kind of arbitrary how it had happened. But yet, he got removed from Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, etc., all on the same day, within like 3 hours of each other. So you can't tell me it's not the same WhatsApp group with the CEOs in Silicon Valley and California. But then they didn't remove his personal account from Twitter. That wasn't enough for the guys at CNN. They've now gone and tried to find tweets that violate Twitter terms of service so that Twitter will kick him off. This is wrong. There's something very wrong about this in the way it's happening and the way it's going about. And this sort of weaponizing of moral outrage by... you know, large organizations and people who work for these large organizations to get rid of their enemies. And I don't think Alex Jones is a good guy. Maybe he's an idiot. He's a dickhead.
Yeah.
But there's something very wrong with this entire process.
But it's always the dickheads and the dangerous people that are the test cases for free speech, right?
Well, that's what free speech exists for. All of these things. All of the rules exist to protect the worst people. Yeah, no, not the best
people. You're not going to fucking, as Tony Leon said on this podcast, you should listen to that one, by the way. Desmond Tutu does not need protection of speech because he says the most Oprah-esque things. Mm. Like he's a fucking South African Oprah, right? Except he doesn't give cars away.
And he has a better laugh.
Yes, much better laugh. But he doesn't need protection of speech, so to speak. Judith Malema apparently doesn't need it either because he can say whatever he wants, which is great. But the Vicky Mombergs of the world, fucking, we haven't spoken about that. 2,000 rand bail for a 3-year sentence. Now it's going on 2,000 rand bail.
Is that good or bad? I don't know. You're the lawyer.
2,000 rand. It's not 100,000 rand bail. It's not half a million. It's 2,000 rand bail. That original sentence was fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
According to, I think, they're going to get it reduced way. Like
100 hours. If not thrown out.
100 hours community service. Go play with like black children somewhere and they will cure your racism. Something like that.
Yeah.
But the Vicky Mombergs and things like that, that's what, you know, freedom of speech is supposed to protect. And thank God Julius is not muzzled. Thank God.
Absolutely, because now we know what he is.
We know exactly who he is.
Before this year, there was some doubt. You and I have always sort of had a very similar view on Julius and who he is and what he is.
Yeah.
But before this year, when he started making, you know, he'd always made the kill the Boer comments and all of that. But then when he started going after the Indians and Chinese people, when he started doing all of that, it became clear to everyone exactly who he is. And thank goodness he's able to stand on a stage and make stupid comments so that everybody knows exactly who he is.
Yeah, but he's black, so it's, you know, it's soft bigotry, low expectations. He's got no power, you know, in South Africa, in a state with a black president, black chief justice, used to be black MPA head. Maybe they'll hire a white one, I doubt it.
Well, is Sean Abrams black? It depends on the definition.
It depends. I mean, Ferrell says she's black when she's clearly not. So then Sean Abrams. Eusebius says he's black when he's clearly not. But,
Sean King says he's black when he's clearly not.
Talcum X.
Talcum X,
So what's the point I was trying to make? So, yeah, so freedom of speech is for those radicals on the fringes to be able to express their views. So we know exactly who they are. In any other ordinary country.
And so you can fight off their views.
Yeah, in every other ordinary country, Malema would be like a real fringe. Like he'd be like the Grand Duke of the clan, you know, if he was white. Like he'd be treated in the same manner.
Mm.
But because he's black, he's treated as like, oh, he's like such a revolutionary and he's a gifted politician. No, he's fucking not. He's a fucking opportunistic bastard of note. He's not great on anything. So what do I want to say? Yeah, so free speech reigns. Interesting question about big tech companies being able to kick people off their platforms without really due process.
Mm.
Still think they're private companies that they should be able to do what they need to do or want to do. But if you get kicked off 5 or 6 major social media networks, and where does it end? As you said, what happens if say I'm with MWeb and they're like, oh no, we won't broadcast, you won't use our data for Renegade reports.
Yeah,
like we fucked. Like we can go to AfriHost.
Yeah, so
they
say the same thing. A podcast that we produce for free, we must suddenly design. We must open our own internet companies and just to have our podcast distributed. It's a difficult thing because, as we say, you shouldn't be able to force private companies into doing what they don't want to do with their property. So there's that. I know both of us, for example, were against net neutrality. Happy that they binned that. But this does net neutrality does come into this in some respects.
I'm not too interested. So we've deviated a little bit.
It's something to think about and maybe something we need to hash out with a future guest.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there something else we needed to talk about, Jonathan? I've forgotten.
Not if you don't want to.
We're very well prepared.
Not if you don't want to. Have you listened to any of the, let's get on to some of the people we listen to. Have you listened to any of the Sam Harris-Peterson sort of conversations?
I have no idea where to find them.
So there's a couple of, I think one has just been released. Okay. I haven't listened to that one recently. There's a couple of sort of bootleg copies. So the guy who produced it, I think it's Thomas Pangburn.
Travis Pangburn.
Travis, that's it.
He's an asshole.
Is he?
Yeah. he's taking the copy, striking everyone who has a copy.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
Well, I mean, he's trying to make his money. So, and he's entitled to do that, I guess. So he did organize the events, but there were some events. It's quite interesting. I think they did manage to sit on stage for like four or five events together without like laying into each other and actually rocking up at the next event.
Imagine Sam Harris raising his voice.
Well, imagine Sam Harris raising his voice, but it'd be interesting to see them in a fight.
It's possible. The guy's a robot.
It sounds like from the bits I did here, and someone did a nice essay actually on the disagreements. But it's the same. It's the same old stuff coming back. You know, it's the sort of what is the truth again? Where Sam wants to define everything within very fixed criteria, and Jordan wants to talk about how everything relates to everything, and how you know, myth and it connects to religion, and how religion doesn't need. I mean, Sam is very frustrated by this entire interpretation that Jordan has of religion, because at one point he cornered him on God. Because Peterson hasn't been very specific on how he defined God. And Peterson basically gave an answer that God is whatever your highest calling is, whatever your greatest sort of being is of yourself.
Yeah.
Sam didn't like that at all. Because, you know, the minute a religious person sort of says, it's not a guy with a beard in the sky, and does something a little bit more esoteric than that, which people can buy into, it there's no... There's no, this is true or it isn't true. It's just something you can buy into as a belief. I think it stumps Harris quite a bit, because he deals in this exists or it doesn't exist. There's evidence for this or there isn't evidence for it. And so they do sound like quite interesting.
Well, I mean, there's two people that believe what the Bible says, atheists and fundamentalists. That was a good quote from someone. I mean, I haven't heard them, I must be honest. I'm a little bit drowned out with podcasts at the moment. I listen to them every day, and just recently I'm just like struggling to...
A little bit too much.
Yeah, I need to get a bit of a break.
Well, you can always listen to Eusebius' show.
God. No, I'm not into sadism, so... Or is it masochism? Which one? What's the one where you get punished? Did you like it?
I think that's masochism.
Masochism.
I think so.
Sadism, that you punish someone else.
I think so.
I'm not into that.
I wouldn't know.
But talking about podcast, ours was Mike Schüssler. I have no idea what happened.
That podcast exploded.
It was, Mike was great. Like, he was fantastic. He came on, and then people just like, oh, wow, this podcast is great. Number one in the whole entire country for 4 or 5 days running.
Yeah. Amongst every podcast.
And we saw the stats. We saw the stats just now. It's like the third most downloaded one we've ever done.
Yeah.
And like, we're just flabbergasted. Like, we don't know what happened.
Yeah. So Mike was saying he needs, you know, Uber XL to carry his ego now. But yeah, a great podcast if you haven't listened to that one yet. I think we've done some good ones recently. We haven't felt flat about any of them, really.
Not in a long time. I think we've done well for all of them.
Yeah, even if we say so ourselves. But give them a listen, and if you've got any comments, as always, we're always open to your feedback. Some really good discussions happening on the Renegade Report group on Facebook. About pretty much everything. There's the couple of taboo topics, apparently.
Oh, there.
But pedophiles that went down very badly, but for the most part, some really good engagement, some really good discussion about, well, sure, everything that's happening in the country, and a lot of the stuff that gets published on a daily basis.
So
and some funny stuff.
I think people do mistake the page for the group, but look for the Renegade Report group. It's a private group, and we'll obviously allow you in if you're not a bot from Thailand. For some reason, Thai people want to come in all the time.
Thai bots. Yeah.
All the time. So
I think that's Carl's presence in the group.
he won't come to the podcast, which is a pity.
Yeah.
If you don't know Carl, join the group and you'll be ready to be blown away. But next week, hopefully, we'll have an editor of a major, major newspaper, Afrikaans newspaper. So it will be interesting to see the differences between English, which we are familiar with, English media, and Afrikaans. I think there's a big difference between the two.
Yeah, there does seem to be a gap, certainly in the reporting and the perspective of what is given, I suppose, different target markets.
But I mean, think about it. Kill the Boer, the book, is a bestseller. Not one review other than mine. Mine was in Report and on Politics Web. I haven't seen any other like mainstream review of the book, as if it doesn't exist.
If you ignore it, Ramon, it'll go away.
It's a bit like
Jordan
Peterson's 12 Rules for Life.
Yeah.
It sold 2.2 million copies.
Over 2 million copies worldwide.
Not once in New York Times bestseller.
I think it's the best-selling book in the world this year.
And for Penguin ever.
Oh, really?
That's what he said. So I don't know if that's true. But
I'd probably non-fiction. But I mean,
whatever,
non-fiction.
In some category.
Yeah.
It hasn't been in the New York Times ever because the rules are different.
It was printed in Canada originally.
Right. But then his previous book that no one read before.
Yeah, it's also printed in Canada.
Now is on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah. you mustn't try to make it. Well, you can make sense of things. It's very clear what's going on there. But the New York Times has caught themselves in knots. Let's just quickly talk about that before we wrap it up. The new editorial staff at the New York Times, Sarah Jong.
Sarah Jong. Yes.
Yes. She had a whole bunch of tweets. When I say a whole bunch, I mean like
hundreds of
them. Yeah, like hundreds,
over years.
Hundreds over at least 5 years. Basically railing against other people of different religions, races, etc., but mainly against white people.
Oh,
and
that's okay.
Some really sort of weird shit about like how she derived joy from harming old white men or something. Anyway, so they appoint her as the editorial. So that's the, I have no, whatever, like fine. And then they appoint her as the editorial staff and still fine because it's the New York Times. And guys, the New York Times earlier this year defended communism twice. The New York Times like is pretty much anti-American and anti-liberalism in every way that can possibly be. The New York Times still employs Paul Krugman. I mean, the guy has been proven wrong so many times. It's a freaking joke. Seriously, like Nobel Prizes don't mean that much, but he should really be taken back. Anyway, so it's not so odd that they would employ this woman onto the editorial staff. What is odd is, of course, what has to happen now is whenever anyone gets a job or something, everyone has to rifle through their social media, and then they have to, on both sides, I might add, they have to rifle through their social media and find something against them. So it recently happened to Ben Shapiro. Some guy on the left said he's actually quite a decent guy, and we should, you know, you shouldn't be hard on him, but like give him a chance because his intentions aren't bad.
Just engage.
Yeah. Just engage with the guy. And basically, people found tweets from Ben from years back or columns he wrote when he was 17 years old and where he was wrong or a bit heavy-handed and lamented him. Anyway, Ben wrote a really good column explaining why he was wrong about those things and why he can be wrong about things and then move on with life.
Yeah.
Anyway, instead of saying, look, this chick wrote these things, they're a bit distasteful, but that's not who she is right now.
But she's grown up. She's learned.
Yeah, and we're employing her because her work is really good, and that's it. End of story. Thanks for playing.
But what do they say? Oh, no, she was
responding
to personal attacks.
To racist personal attacks with satire. With satire. So if you go through the tweets, you will find most of them are not responses. They are just
they're just tweets about hating white people.
And yeah, it's clearly not satire. It's just her opinions. And it's just strange that they, you know, own it. Just own it.
Just say she hates white people. That's fine.
Yeah.
We can live with it. I can live with it perfectly well.
I'm okay with that.
Because the same Kevin Williamson went to the Atlantic. Kevin Williamson's a libertarian conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a tweet, satirical tweet that said, I understand why people who have abortions should be put to death. Basically saying, if you believe it's murder, logically it makes sense that you don't want people
follow the logic
to have the death sentence. It's not his view,
yes,
but he understands why that would be.
He
lasted 12 minutes at the fucking Atlantic, and they fired him.
Yes, they did. They did fire him and that was for one opinion.
Yep.
Which wasn't even his full opinion. So it goes back to the Boris Johnson thing again. Yeah. And I mean, we can go on about all the incidents where this happens, where people say one thing and then it's a Cathy Newman moment. So what you're saying,
like kill all women who want abortions. Like, no, yes. That's not at all what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But no, but it's interesting. So the corner culture really started on the left the past 20, 30 years or so. Mm. Now it's being used against them, and now they're doubling down and saying, no, it was satirical retorts to racism. It was this. But when Kevin Williams makes a joke, no, he really believed it. Mm-hmm. Like Bill de Blasio, the fucking New York mayor, goes on CNN and he says, oh, Fox News is destroying our democracy. Rupert Murdoch must be taken off the airwaves.
Yeah, his businesses must be shut down.
So you attack Fox News, it's Rupert Murdoch. You attack CNN, oh, you're attacking democracy.
Yeah.
No, fuck you.
Or Trump both says, of you. Trump says something about the media and his comments are completely out of line. 100 editorials this last weekend against Trump in newspapers across the United States, driven by Brian Stelter. Bill de Blasio says the same thing. Bill de Blasio, by the way, who might be a candidate for president come the next election on the Democrat side. No, I really want Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to be a candidate. I've never seen anyone so clueless in my entire life. But in fact, you know who she reminds me of? Sorry, I'm going to go at a tangent here.
Yeah.
But what's her name that we had in studio? Lovely girl.
Chelsea Lotz.
Yes, she is American Chelsea Lotz. Listen to that podcast. Good laugh. But if the one side says one thing, it's terrible. The other side says the exact same thing. It's perfectly fine. And we even had an example of this whole double standard with Trevor Noah recently. Trevor Noah makes inverted commas racist comments about Aboriginal women. It was a funny joke, as far as I'm concerned. And the outrage culture used against him, and still people calling for him to lose his job. But he's learnt. Give him credit. He's learnt. If you ignore them for long enough, they go away and they find another toy.
Didn't he issue an apology? I'm sure
he issued some benign apology where he was like, oh, I see now that it was wrong and I will never make a joke like that again. And I've removed all the content. And when I'm in Australia, I'm going to visit some Aboriginal site and, I don't know, feel really sorry for my joke. Yeah, bullshit. And should we call it quits? That's it.
Yeah, okay, this was a bit of a rambling one. I do apologize. It is late at night, and we've had a rough Monday.
I think it was a decent podcast.
No, it was fine. So this was, anyway, we'll see you next week. Don't forget, don't forget, it's okay to be right-wing.
Yeah.
Fight it, own it, and fucking destroy your enemy.
It's not derogatory in any way.
Yeah, and destroy your enemy. The fake news media in this country is out of control. We destroyed the HuffPo. Now we're going after no one really. We're not actually destroying anyone. HuffPo imploded by itself, to be fair. But no, own it. Own it. Tell these fuckers what you think about them. And that if they're enablers for one of the most destructive policies the world's ever known, which is extinguishing property rights, which was the fundamental underpinning of apartheid, by the way. If they stand for it because it's a black person doing it as opposed to a white one.
Yeah.
Go on Twitter and tell them to go get fucked. Royally.
Lovely. If you enjoyed the show, you can always support us on Patreon. Ramon at Roman Kabanak on Twitter. Myself at Jonathan_Witt. The show page at Renegade_Report. Find us on Facebook as well. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.